than done. Attitude of life. Talk about anxiety this evening. I had a moment of anxiety coming down to the church building this evening. Got pretty much all the way here to the building, and I looked over and I didn't have my Bible and my sermon notes with me. I walked out the door with some different papers in my hand that I wanted to bring down to the office, and I left my Bible and notes on the table at home, so I had to turn around, and I did. I went back, so good thing I left early to get down here. So just a moment of anxiety, but it was still productive. I just take it, it's dry, and go. I have time to go back home and bless you by picking up my...
How hard you get?
I got all the way almost to the building. Paula had a moment of anxiety just a few moments ago. She came up to Jim and said, "Did you get my note? My email?" He said, "Yeah, the note's in the bulletin." And we didn't call me back. So we have those moments. So we're going to talk just a little bit about that anxiety. She fixed it. You know, she went right to the source when she saw it here. So she relieved that anxiety rather quickly. So we're going to talk about anxiety a little bit, but not the clinical, you know, which is horrible, where you need a doctor. We're just going to talk about us. Text is usually sometimes the best fix we have for anxiety is just somebody telling us, "Don't worry about it." I'm worried, but don't worry about it. In the text in Philippians chapter 4, beginning of verse 4, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always." And again, I say rejoice. "Be anxious for nothing," or "careful for nothing," one of the other translations says. "But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, of good report, there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. And then those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace shall be with you." We'll look at anxiety a little bit. I just put by way of introduction in your notes that's very familiar what has been labeled a serenity prayer. "Lord, help me to change the things I can, accept the things I cannot change. Give me the wisdom to know the difference." You know, we even sing songs in our book, and I like to reference our hymns many times because they certainly teach us and admonish us. You know, we have songs with the title, "God Will Take Care of You," anxiety, "Count Your Many Blessings," "Blessed Assurance, "Shelter in the Time of Storm," is a shelter, "Leaning on Everlasting Arms," "Victory in Jesus," "Standing on the Promises," like that one. "Anywhere with Jesus, I can safely go." So when we think about anxiety, the kind that we don't want is defined as it's a worry that undoes progress, or it's the kind of worry that makes or destroys being productive. We don't want that. That's what we want to eliminate in our lives. It's a worry that takes us away from doing things or involving ourselves in ministry or service. It's a worry that causes us to kind of want to crawl into a corner and just hide and just not do anything. So when Paul admonishes us, "Be not anxious," or "Be careful for nothing," or "for these kinds of things," that's what we want to have a check on in our life. We talk about a productive worry, causing us to take right action. Well, I was worried. in my notes. Well, how are you going to eliminate that? I'm going to turn around and go back home. I'm going to go back and pick up my Bible, my sermon notes. We worry about an auto accident, so it causes us to drive safely or obey the laws. Yeah, there's the right kind of worry. We try to drive defensively because we sometimes we worry about if the other person is going to drive safely. We worry about our health. Do we do things healthy? You know, we eat right, exercise, take our medicine. But we try as much as lies within us. We worry about a test in school, so we study for it, not just at the last minute. You may not know it, but I'm nervous every time I stand before an audience before I preach. So I have to focus on the task. And sometimes that's why when I get up here, the first thing I do is kind of, it's just a relief for me, something I do, is I welcome everybody. It just helps me, instead of just standing up and start and saying the title for tonight's lesson is, I just get up and look over the audience and say a few words of welcome. It just helps me. But one way that I relieve the anxiety that I have, even as long or the number of years that I've preached, I still have that moment of trembling, so to speak. So there's some practical admonitions that I hope will free us. And I know if someone said they're worried, these are some of the things that we would say. Words of encouragement to one another. Or we might even say, personal example, this is what's helped me over the years. I know what you're going through. You know, I've been there. We get sympathetic or have empathy. Yeah. So number one is just learn. I just put learn contentment. Comes from knowledge and experience. Just a couple of illustrations, even maybe over financial situations that we may go through sometime in our life. So Paul said it this way in Philippians 4, beginning of verse 11. Not that I speak in regard to need, but at the current moment, Paul said, no, I don't need anything. But he says, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I've learned. I know how to be abased. I know what to do when times are bad. I know how to live when things aren't going so well. I've learned that, how to be abased. He says, I also know how to abound. When times are great, they're going good for me. Well, I'm very, very blessed. But he continues, everywhere and in things, all things I have learned. I've learned that. Both to be full and to be hungry. To abound and to suffer need. So we come time, there's a situation when we experience a time of anxiety or worry. I just don't know. We need to learn contentment. Paul said in 1 Timothy 6, verse 6, godliness with contentment is great gain. In verse 8, he said, having food and clothing, with these shall we be content. Contentment. Hebrews 13, verse 5, the Hebrew writer said, be content with such things as you have. In Luke 3, Jesus gave the admonition in verse 13. He said to them, to the soldiers, collect no more than what is appointed for you. Likewise, the soldiers asked him, saying, what shall we do? And he said to them, don't intimidate anyone or accuse falsely, and be content with your wages. See, if the soldiers were discontent with their wages, Paul or Jesus is admonishing them, now don't add to your income by extortion or stealing. But there's certainly a legitimate time to increase our wages. Might be by longevity on the job. Might be adding credentials that would qualify us for a higher wage or a higher position. The idea of being content is not that we need to be content and never strive to improve. No, that's not the lesson. He's saying don't allow your discontent to lead you to do lawlessness. So sometimes we worry about even our financial situation. Concerning talents and opportunities, but don't fret and fume over your abilities that you don't have or cannot attain. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 2, more of it's required a steward, the man be found faithful, and that's it. Just be faithful with what you have. We don't have to measure up to another's ability. 2 Corinthians 10, beginning of verse 12, we dare not class ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves, are not wise. But we, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God appointed us. Sometimes I think when I'm having to speak at a gospel meeting or a lectureship or recently the men's workshop and my turn to speak, and even before, I look out over the audience and I look at all the preachers that are there and I'm thinking, I'm getting a little anxious. I should be listening to them, and here they are in attendance going to listen to me. I think, pressure's on. Get anxious. But yet, I'll preach what I prepared. So that's why we overcome the anxiety. I have a lesson that I've studied. Material that I think is valuable to those, should be valuable to those in attendance. So you make that anxiety productive. So I know that I've spent time in preparation, spent time in reviewing and study. We do that. I know even sometimes, on Sunday mornings after Bible class, if I spend a few moments greeting people, but I always like to come up to the front and sit down and give my notes even one last review. Now let me spend just a few moments. So 5 minutes before we get up and start the announcements of the worship assembly, even though I know I have my notes here, but I've studied them already, I want one last look. Relieve that anxiety, so to speak. Even though I've been preaching all these years, I still do that. Say a little prayer. It's reflected also in our ability to give. The talents and opportunities. In Acts 11, verse 29, then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. So according to their ability, they have to do what the other is doing. In 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12, it says, for if there is first a willing mind, it's accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. I always think about this when Jack Farber, one of our missionaries, comes and gives us a report on the Latin American missions. I always come prepared, with the checkbook in hand, even though I know our contributions help support that, but I just know that I'm going to be moved to want to do something else. We need these thousands of dollars. Well, I can't do thousands. I can do hundreds once. Maybe that night I can do more than the weekly offering or contribution. But come prepared. We just do what we can. And even in his report, he made lists all the people that are involved in this ministry. And people that give much, much more than we are able to. A lot of people are giving less than we do, but still, the principle is according to your ability. So I don't let that worry me, that I can't give what someone else has done above and beyond. You learn contentment. We do what we can. Second, learn to live one day at a time. In other words, for the moment. Matthew 6, verse 34, Jesus says, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow. Well, there's a sense we need to worry about tomorrow and plan ahead, but that's not his lesson for the moment. Worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. So I put in your notes. About the 10-year-old boy who sat down and figured out how many times he would have to tie his shoes if he lived to be 80. up for tomorrow. If you tied your shoes all of those times, you'll still have to tie them tomorrow. I could prepare for a Wednesday night class today, but I can't teach it till Wednesday night. Don't give your thought for tomorrow. You think about the second hand on a clock. It just takes one time per second. But if that second hand could speak, he would think, oh, you know, I have to tick 60 times per minute.
Yeah, right.
60 times per minute. 3,600 times per hour. That second hand would think to himself, I have to tick 86,400 times today. Wow. No, you don't, second hand. You only have to tick once each second. Don't worry about the number of times you've got to tick in the next minute, the next hour, or for the day. All I have to do is tick once. Right now, when Christine and I are driving home from visiting our son, daughter-in-law, and grandkids, especially if it's during the when the daylight hours are not very long, we're driving home at night. You turn the headlights on. It's a 140-mile journey, but the headlights only light up a couple hundred feet in front of the car. It doesn't light up the whole way. It just takes care of the moment. That's all I need to see are a few hundred feet in front of me at the time. So that's the lesson when Jesus, and we talk about worry, learning to live one day at a time, you know, for the moment. What do I need to do right now? If you take on a project, and you'll see, oh, there's 16 steps. Oh, no, there's just one right now to start with. Jim had to do that project in his backyard. Oh, no, look at all the work I have to do. No, you just have to do this right now and then the next one. You can't do it all at once. It doesn't work that way. I think, how many sermons am I going to have to preach this year? 100? Do it 2 a week or something? In 30 years, 3,000 outlines? 3,000 and never repeat a topic? You'd be worried. No, but all I need to do is just 2 this week. So learn to live one day at a time. What do you have to do right now? Number 3 and 4 kind of go together. Learn to keep busy, shun idleness. Learn to make hardships a blessing. The slogan kind of goes along with this, idle hands are the devil's workshop. So when you worry, you do something about it. In our current economic situation, I saw just a couple weeks ago, ABC News had a segment on the unemployed who were worried about finding employment. So they interviewed these people who were looking for employment. But what they did in the interviews, they interviewed people who, even though they're unemployed, they were volunteering in their community. They were keeping busy. They took classes. They tried to educate themselves for a career change. Are you worried about not having a job? Yes, I am, but I'm going to do something about it. Worry that I don't have a job. So we, in part of our learning about how to overcome our worry or anxiety, is shun the idleness. You know, we even worry when our kids are away from us, or maybe away at college, whatever. But we still go to work. We don't just sit home, oh, they're going to be away for these many, many months, and I just better sit here and worry. No. We still go about our business. We need to learn to make hardships a blessing, and a lot of people do that by making resolutions to do better. The idea of saying, I'm going to learn from my mistakes. I'll get busy. I'll help others. I'll strengthen myself. Yeah. Of course, the illustration that, you know, the world gives us, you know, is, you know, when life serves you lemons, make lemonade. Well, sometimes when life serves me lemons, I want to take that lemon and squirt the juice back in their eye. But that's not what to do. The slogan concludes, make lemonade. Well, that's what we need to do with our worry. Make it productive. I know when I was getting my teaching credential,
teacher and taking the classes at night. You worry about getting hired full time. Yeah. Put all these applications out. When I wasn't being hired, because I had a lot of teachers back when I got my credential, and I was worried. What am I going to do? The first question they ask is, do you speak Spanish? I said, no, I don't. Do you have a special ed credential? I said, no, I don't. But I'll get one. So I went back to school tonight for several years. Even the brethren here took a little worry off my mind, because there was one session where the night classes I took required a Wednesday evening, a Monday, Wednesday, and a Saturday once a month. But the brethren here said, no, don't worry about that. Yeah, but I'm an employee. Don't worry about that. We'll take care of that Wednesday night while you finish that session. All right. Thank you. And the last one I have, number 5. We want to be productive. But learn to see God as your partner. And don't diminish that at all. Like when someone says, Brian, we're praying for you. That's not a slight statement. There's some power in that, because you're asking and invoking the power of heaven and all that that involves. When you say, I'm praying for you, that's something. That's a good thing. That's powerful. We need to hear that, along with the idea of how can I help you, or let me get that for you. What do you need? But I'm praying. So we need to learn to see God as a partner, and not to give up on faith, and don't withdraw from others because we're worried about a situation in our life. That's the time to lean toward God. In 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9, Paul said, "For we are laborers together with God." Now, we're laborers together with God. 1 Peter 5, verse 7, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your cares or anxieties or your worries on him, for he cares for you." So number 5, learn to see God as your partner. So this, I'm going to close with this in a bulletin this week, a photocopy. Called Grandma's Cake. It fit in with the lesson somehow. Little boy was telling his grandma how everything was going wrong. School, brothers and sisters, sickness. And as she listened, Grandma decided to bake a cake. As she got everything ready, she asked her grandson if he'd like a snack. "Of course," he said. She said, "Here, have some cooking oil." Grandma said, "Yuck," said the boy. Grandma said, "Well, how about a couple raw eggs?" "Oh, Grandma, that's gross." She said, "Would you like some flour? Or maybe some baking soda?" The little boy said, "Grandma, those are all yucky." Grandma said, "Yes, all of those things seem bad all by themselves. But when they're put together in the right way, they make a wonderfully delicious cake." God works the same way. Many times we wonder why he would let us go through such bad and difficult times. But God knows that when he puts all of these things, all in his order, they work for good. We just have to trust him. And eventually they'll all make something wonderful. Now, maybe at the time, that situation we're worried about, that doesn't taste good. But when we're productive, we set things in order, do those things that are right, something wonderful comes from that. You say you may be a blessing to others. We missed our Bible class this morning. You just, situations, that when we go through them, we can help others go through their situations. So that's the lesson this evening. And always at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation. Maybe one here this evening, now members of the New Testament Church, not a Christian, you have that opportunity to obey. We extend this invitation every time we assemble at the close of a lesson. Heard the good news. You believe that God so loved the world, he sent a son. You're willing to turn your life around. Confess your faith. I believe Jesus Christ is God's son. You'd be baptized for remission of sin. Rise to walk in newness of life. So that's always the invitation we extend. You may want to have to close the song, ask the brethren for strength or encouragement, or make a prayer request. We can also honor that. So let's stand together and sing the song that Jesus...